Hi, and welcome to episode 116 of Fully Boosted, the War Machine Hordes podcast. I'm Grant.
I'm Brad.
I'm also Brad.
Oh, I forgot about the we're all Brad thing. I missed the last episode.
Wait, why is that a thing?
I don't know.
That's
what you guys did last episode.
What I do every episode. I pick a random person to also be.
That's true. But then also Baby Michael and Donnie were also Brad.
I don't remember that.
No.
I'm just a trendsetter, Grant.
Yeah, I'm a follower. So, that's more what I'm about. So, we are back. Both Matt and Brad are back from Warfare Weekend, the first one. When Matt made it all the way to the finals and lost on assassination to Ben Beckman, which you can find online. That game was streamed and was super enjoyable to watch. So, Matt, congrats on that, buddy.
Yeah.
Really great run. Really proud of you. And Brad, you were also there.
Yeah, I made it into the big dance, and I went for a sleepover in St. Louis, basically.
Yeah, you did a pretty crazy suicide trip.
Not something I plan on doing again. Not going to War Machine Weekend. I mean, or Warfare Weekend. But my boss and coworker were both on vacation the week leading up to and immediately after. So I couldn't take off work Friday or Monday. So when planning this trip, I had to fly to St. Louis on Saturday and be back Sunday night. So we did it, but it sucked.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds pretty terrible. Yeah, you got in at what time Sunday night? Like 2?
I left St. Louis at 6:30. I landed back in Philly at midnight because I had to have a connection in Charlotte. And then by the time I got home and went to sleep, it was like 2, 2:30.
Fantastic.
I slept for 3 hours Saturday into Sunday, which, so I was real rested.
So let's get into the event itself, because I do want to talk a little bit about some of the changes, whether they were noticeable or not, but the change from War Machine Weekend to Warfare Weekend, where they included some of the games. And then we'll get into, we won't do your guys' lists, just cause, we'll talk about what you play, but you can find them. I think Zoe should put them up. It's either 1084 or 1087 on Conflict Chamber. I will have to look that up, but if anyone's curious about those lists, it's one of those two. But we did get sponsored by Diet Kador. So that was cool. You know, we got our first sponsor this week.
Yeah. So I'm really happy I was able to start another meme online. That's my legacy in War Machine, win or lose, is just going to be fueling all the dumbest memes, and I'm okay with that. For those that don't know, my Kador pairing was Zarkova 1 Flames and Vlad 3 Warriors of the Old Faith. My only Kador models were my casters, which led the online community to get itself whipped into a situation, so to speak, and complain about how I was playing Kador with only 2 Kador models.
Yeah, Matt, because that's why you chose Diet Kador, not Kador. You wanted that sweet Kador caster goodness without all those garbage Kador models.
Yep. So remember, guys. When you feel the need to win a game, but don't want to be, you know, hampered by regular Kador, try Diet Kador.
God damn it.
I can give you a very different sales pitch.
Go ahead.
I played Crix using only 1 non-Crix model. I lost round 1.
All right. So what did we learn?
I don't know. Apparently Diet's better than the full thing.
Yeah. So what was your, Matt, both of you have been before, how was your overall experience? Was there anything noticeably different, with the change from the War Machine Weekend over to Warfare Weekend, where they included, a lot more game systems?
I didn't notice anything personally. As someone who was there from Thursday till Monday, I guess in theory there was other game systems there, but they all had their own rooms and, I didn't notice them existing in any meaningful way, I guess would be the way I'd put it.
Yeah, in my sleepover to St. Louis, I noticed that they were there, just like any other convention. And then you go and play War Machine, and I don't know. You generally don't notice them. I think good on the organizers for Word for Weekend to include other games. I don't think there's really any harm or foul to it. I can remember Matt from the previous War Machine weekends, like the room up by the bar was generally just like completely underserved in years past. And like now they were able to fill with other game systems. Like good for them.
Yeah, I guess like that's the other thing is like all the halls that aren't normally like fully occupied are actually occupied. I don't know. I was just doing my own thing. So for those that have never been or maybe haven't really experienced like the full War Machine Weekend thing, there's like a lot of tradition that goes along with it. And like at least for the events I go to, like Bubba and the other Canadians kind of have this whole tradition they follow every year where we go out to barbecue for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day.
and, the diet of champions.
Yeah.
And, that's a winner's meal right there, buddy.
Hey, man, you got to do what you got to do. So we got to barbecue a bunch. There's a super fucking sweet smoothie place right across the across the way. So you go and you get, you know, in between barbecue meals there. And like, you know, for those that are in the invitational, you scout out the people in the LCQ, see who's going to make a good LCQ or make a good addition to WTC teams the following year, see what up and comers are really performing, and like who you can take in and kind of like help out and help grow, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which by the way, congrats to Jason Watt, who won the LCQ and then won round one also, right? He beat Fogel.
Yes,
and then and then Bubba took him down the following round, but that was
those darn Canadians.
Yeah, bastards stealing all our, they're tricking all our gerbs.
So to talk, let's just talk about Warfare Weekend like as the whole thing right now. So really, if you're gonna go to Warfare Weekend, you really want to get in Thursday night. Thursday night, all the halls are open. You have lots of gaming, early registration, just like a ton of really great things to do. So Thursday night myself, I met up with Jeremy Posner, my round one opponent in the Invitational, and Marc-Andre LeBlanc, and a few other Canadians, Matt Goldfarb and Alex Dunn, a few guys from the Minority Report podcast as well, Demon and Chance, I want to say. And we played some games in the hall. Had a really good time just chilling, relaxing, playing fun games, getting some meaningful practice in. For those that are in the LCQ, they try to go to bed a little bit early, wake up and play the 7 rounds, I think it is, of the most grueling single elimination, well, not single elimination, but, you know, only one guy gets into the big event from it, and it's just this grueling experience. And... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask, did you and Jeremy play just like a... I assume you guys played like off lists, or did you...
So, Friday, while everyone else was doing the LCQ, I put together a steamroller that had me, Brent Simon, Jeremy Posner, Jake Van Meter, a few other people in it, Chris Dancox, trying to think who else, just like a lot of like basically everyone who was in the Invitational, and Jeremy and I ended up playing round one of the steamroller, and we played our pairing that we would play in the Invitational into each other. Sorry, go ahead.
Can I give a shout out to one person? So in your steamroller was also one Mr. Mike Stone, who is no longer Baby Mike anymore. Cause as of Monday, or at least as of Monday of this recording, he is now 21.
He's still Baby Michael. I mean, that's
not happy birthday, Michael Stone.
Yeah, that's not a nickname you just get rid of, though. So
I mean, he will always be Baby.
Yeah,
Michael.
He's Baby Michael. It doesn't matter.
I think Chuck Ellswick called him a pimp queen during the Invitational. So that's what we've been calling him recently.
Okay.
So I played Jeremy in the steamroller. Had a really good game. It was just like a really good, enjoyable Friday. Got to watch the LCQ a bit. I brought smoothies for all my buddies who were in the LCQ. Just ran over to Smoothie King and grabbed like 8 smoothies and delivered them to everyone in the middle of their games.
That's lovely.
Yeah, I try to do it every year, you know. Like my first LCQ, I went like 12 hours without food or drinks. So, you know, it's rough when
I mean, we still reminded you, even though you weren't playing. We were still messaging you, telling you to eat and drink.
That's actually accurate.
Yeah, we weren't sure if you were going to remember.
I mean, I ate and drank a lot over the weekend. There's barbecue there. Like, I gorged myself. I was a fat boy. It was glorious. Besides that, like, watch the Friday, just watching the LCQ, talking to people, helping people, you know, or watching people speed paint their models they got from the shop. Really, really enjoyable experience. Yeah, man. Like, the best part of Warfare Weekend and War Machine Weekend historically has always been hanging out with your friends and shooting the shit and seeing people you only get to see at that event.
Yeah, I've heard that. That was one of the sells that you guys really had me on that I wanted to go this year, was just the people that I'm not going to see anywhere else, and just being able to talk and hang out with everybody. But then, as I am wont to do, I had a wedding to attend, so.
Do you just ever not have a wedding to attend?
Like, yeah. I did. Now I'm out. I'm done. That was it. That's the last person in.
That's a lie.
Oh, the fuck! I gotta go to yours.
There you go.
God damn it! There's gonna be what conventions that weekend? I'm sure there's gonna be one that I can't go to.
Literally none. Mm-hmm. I planned ahead.
All right, great.
Brad knew his wedding couldn't compete with a convention.
Well, when Ashley and I were looking at venues, I like pulled up a calendar. I was like, not this weekend, not that weekend.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to make us choose.
That's half true.
Yeah,
I choose the convention, Brad. I'm sorry.
He would tell you to. He would be like, you do that.
I'll be there in spirit. Don't worry.
I'll Skype you in that
we'll
night.
Be ghost Matt.
Yeah.
Hologram technology is really strong right now. I might be able to do that.
I need a lot of hologram to cover me.
So I think they
make double XL holograms.
So I don't super want to do round by round for Matt unless you really want to.
Well, we could do round for round for Brad.
Yeah, we could definitely do that for Brad, and it shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, we'll have plenty of time.
This was the joke right before I left, by the way, to fly home on Sunday. Was, Matt, I'm really looking forward to casting this week, so you can talk about your five games, and I can talk about my one.
Yeah, it happened exactly like that. It was great.
That's what I said on Sunday before I flew home. So Matt's had a week to prepare for his five-game talk. I'll do mine real quick.
Great.
I was lucky enough to play Ben Beckman, the winner of the Warfare Weekend Invitational this year, which real quick, because it's a single-limb event, means that I took a comfortable 17th place based on strength of schedule.
Is that how that works, Brad?
Yes. That's accurately how that works.
Okay.
I don't know, man. I don't think that's how that works, Brad.
100% how that works.
Did
Matt checks out.
Did you sit down and figure it out?
Well, it doesn't take a whole lot to figure
sure,
it out, right?
Sure, but, well, you got
32 players.
Yeah.
16 of them were out round one, so I can't be 16 and up. So if all the people had zero wins, there's 16 of them.
Sure, and then you have the
best. Five schedule. I'm 17th.
Yeah,
guess who's comfortably in 18th?
I have no idea.
Jeremy Posner losing to Matt McWaters round one.
I guess that's fair. Yeah,
the only
okay.
person with a four.
So do your game, Brad.
Real quick, I want to make sure everyone knew I was in 17th. So my game, I played Scar 1 into Assyria, and I go first that game on Invasion. Generally with Scar, you want to go second, because their scenario game on the bottom of 2 is so strong, but Double Tridents will scream across the table, and I won't be able to do anything.
What was
same
the scenario?
Thing with
I'm sorry.
It was Invasion.
Okay.
So there's no quick win on the bottom of 2 anyway, so I choose to go first. Turn 1, we move forward. He moves forward on bottom of 1. My top of 2, I want to say I just posture again. I think, if I remember what I did correctly, I put my arc node forward in a spot to where I could hellfire off the power glove guy, like the solo, and like hid behind a forest with it and like positioned in past turn. I think he killed a stalker on the bottom of 2 and the objective. Yeah, that sounds about right. I think he killed a stalker in the objective. So my top of 3, I go in and feet. We kill a trident. We kill Himera and like 9 of the 12 sentinels. In doing so, we scored both circle zones and I killed the objective. So I passed back 3-1. The part that I've neglected to mention so far is Scar had moved laterally to feet on one of Iacos' stalkers, which I positioned out of her control range of 12 prior to moving. So I had to move towards the stalker for one to feed on it. So when I passed back, Scar was not fully behind a forest, which allowed him to come in and kill Scar on her feet turn using a ghost sniper and a trident. So I died, and then my evening was done. Retrospect, the stalker should have been positioned more centrally so that I could have feeded and then advanced behind the forest. Or I should have just not feeded on that stalker and passed, or not passed, I should not feed on that stalker and then just move behind the forest and that stalker do mildly less work. So yeah, I felt really good on everything I was able to kill on feet turn. He also killed a Wraith Engine through feet using Imperatus, but with a series of feet. And all of your focus and giving it +2 strength, like Imperatus was going to kill whatever he wanted to anyway. So he kills a Wraith Engine through feet, but most importantly, Scar died. End of my invitational weekend. I played some more pickup games after that, but that was the end of my run.
Did you see the Issy game coming? Because you and I had talked a lot about, like, Gareth. Was that?
I thought for sure it was Gareth.
Yeah.
I had talked to a couple of rep players in our area on the run-up to it, and the feedback I got was that Gary can play in a stealth. The Mortality and Armor Pierce game is better for Wraith Engines, and Assyria doesn't have any tremendously reliable ways to threaten Wraith Engines on the approach, so they can kind of dominate tablespace and positioning. So I was expecting Gary to, as one list has the tools to deal with Scar 1, even if the game might be a little bit harder to deal with the Stalkers in Gary 2, compared to Assyria, who, while she of course has tools to handle Stalkers, brings, you know, relatively none to handle Wraith Engines, other than like a Crusader's Call slipstreamed Imperatus, which is fairly easy to measure if that's the only threat.
Okay, I was just curious, because like I said, you, I don't think once in our talks leading up to that did we discuss Assyria, so...
Nope, I was pretty certain he was going to drop Gary too, and then I was mistaken.
Yeah, because when I talked to Ireland about it that day, I was like, he's like, confirmed he lost to Assyria. I was like, what? When the fuck? Okay.
So I think a lot of the, when we talk about like the different metas between America and Europe or North America and Europe, there is that different expectation of what matchups are based on like what tools people are used to playing against. And it's a weird one. Like there's always a different expectation on each side of the table and like different thought process, right? Like when he dropped Assyria, she has that turn where, like, she can just, if you don't feed aggressively and you don't get the tool, she could just feed and, like, pull off stalkers before you get the chance to feed, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And that opens up a lot of interesting lines of play. I don't know what I would have dropped if I was Ben, but it sounds like Assyria was the right choice.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, was able to win the game doing so. I didn't give him a good chance to feed on bottom of two to kill many stalkers. One was in a trench off on a flank that he wouldn't be able to get the trident space into, so it had cover. Another one was in rubble. Another one was behind an obstruction, kind of within a zone, and the others were just generally out of threat. The thing he could have done, I guess, is if he wanted to like run his trident forward, could have e-leaped into it. But they weren't in like a reliable threat range beyond that. So. The one stalker that did die, though, on top of two, was just placed within a forest. So he didn't feat for it. He used the Eyeless Sighted objective to let him shoot into it.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, so that one did die, but the other ones all had cover or were out of line of sight or threat. So
makes sense.
So he held feat, which helped his dice going through on the feat turn. I'm sorry, on the assassination run. So, yeah, I mean, it was a good game. I just should not have put Scar any spot than behind the forest on the turn that I was going to feed. So, lesson learned for myself. Unfortunate that the lesson had to be in the Invitational, but you have to take away things from every game you play.
Sure. So, Matt, you want to talk a little about, you know, a couple of your games?
Sure.
Or whatever you want to discuss.
Yeah, sure. So my round one is against Jeremy. Sweet dude, we've played a few times. He's a very active member of the Discord, playing Fiona and another list I didn't look at. He's playing Fiona the faction, Mercs. So we, like, after the Steamroller, we basically agreed that we would just be playing the same, like, same matchup in the Invitational. He felt like that with the practice he got in the Steamroller, that he was in a good enough position to, you know, he learned enough in the Steamroller to come out ahead in the Invitational against me. So we played, and so really cool things. I learned a lot in my run-up games with the Thimericons, and like what they could and couldn't do, and like how to keep them alive, and how the different modules of the list works in the Zhirkova 1 list. And like a lot of the positioning I did in that was really interesting to kind of have it confirmed that it works, if that makes sense, because it wasn't like I had a million games of Zhirkova 1 before the Invitational. I kind of like last minute, like the week before, the 2 weeks before, got it all painted and was like, I really want to play this list. Let's make it happen, kind of a thing.
Yeah, you did a good job grinding that fucking paint out, too.
Yeah, I mean, my lovely girlfriend, Alicia, really helped out a lot. She, you know, spent a lot of time working on models, as did I. My buddy Justin put in a lot of time, and during the event, Ben and Aggie finished my unit of vigilance, or vigilantes, as I like to call them. And so round one. So basically, I divide my army up into these two modules. And the scenario was invasion, so I have my Thamar Archons, Morrow Archon, and Vigilance on the left side. The Thamar Archons are sitting in a piece of rubble, so they're like Def 20, just ignoring the world, don't really care about anything. My Vigilance are like on the edge of a zone. They're stealth, Pathfinder, hit accurately, and have good guns. And we're just like, and then on the other side, I have all my other models. And I'm just sitting there, and I'm just like, my entire goal this game is to just play 7 turns. I feel like my attrition is strong enough that over the course of a 7-turn game, I'm going to win. So all I'm going to do is just sit there and let Jeremy take whatever models he wants, spend as much time as he wants to take models. I'm going to take clear, concise turns and focus on scoring 1 or 2 points where it doesn't cost me anything, especially clock time. So I'm just like, Cloud Wall. I'm trying to feed as late into the game as possible. Mm-hmm. So, like, the object being, as Jeremy becomes more desperate to score points and get up ahead, he's going to have to overextend and have to commit more resources. And I want him to. I want him to feel like he has to do that. So I'm just like, I'm not going to give him a feat. I'm not going to feat. I'm going to force him to overextend and use his feat. And then, in response, then I'll feat. Right? So that way, I kind of get to double down on him not being able to do anything. That make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So as the game kind of like goes out, due to some nerves and some other things that happened, I'm able to, you know, kind of just get like a positioning advantage that turns into a clock advantage that turns into an attrition advantage, and slowly kind of just win the game by the end of it, up by like three points on scenario, and slowly building the lead. So I win. Jeremy concedes, and we go on to game two versus Chris Green. For those of you who don't know Chris Green, he is a super sweet, lovely dude. I've played him quite a few times, and earlier in the weekend we played the matchup of Zhirkova versus Fiona. Me not thinking that he was going to be one of the people I played in the Invitational. I played versus his Fiona list. We had a pretty interesting game. So when we got to the Invitational, he dropped his Shay list instead, which admittedly was a pretty big issue into my list of weapon masters. Because, like, you know what's really good at killing Archons? An army of super accurate weapon masters against warrior models.
Yep, that seems like that's pretty good.
So, in that game, I just positioned. I made a few key mistakes here that let him get some pretty big attritional leads. And I feeded and caught a lot of stuff that was really good. He was able to score 4 points on scenario and put me down pretty hard. But in doing so, left me a pretty good odds assassination that I was able to kind of just like spray him with Sarkova, shoot him with a Thamorite Archon, and then charge him with Gabriel Throne, which killed the shit out of Shay.
Very nice.
Round three, this was against... did I play round... Alexander Cosma.
Mm-hmm.
Cosma dropped Jalam, hot Jalami sandwich in Disciples of Agony, and I dropped Sarkova 1. So, like, the trend you're going to realize over this event is that I dropped Sarkova 1 every round, even when my other list probably was a better choice. And that's just because I just wasn't feeling confident in my off list. Not for, like, the quality of the list, but I had maybe 2 games with it. I didn't really feel like I had gotten adequate practice, and I felt a lot more secure dropping, even to a bad matchups, dropping something I was comfortable with rather than dropping something that I was uncomfortable with.
Yeah, for sure. I've done that. I did that a lot with Zol too. I think you're a lot of times you're better off playing a list you're more comfortable with, right?
Yeah, so like even if theoretically something was a good matchup, the positioning requirements to compete at that high of a level means I should drop something that I'm comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
So in this game, basically it's like a positioning intensive matchup. I position pretty well. Cosma sees that I left a line to Sarkova, so he can get Jalam gunshots, 2 Roadhog sprays, and a Kriya parasite shot on Sarkova to kill her. I'm camping 1, and I'm behind my entire army. So he's like, okay, I see you've given me this assassination run, I'm gonna go for it. So I do a quick run of the math in my head, and I'm like, okay, this is like a 1% assassination. He needs to hit, he basically has to kill me with a single boosted power 12. Because of like the focus and the hermit I have.
Right.
It also needs a 12 to hit.
Yeah.
So, well, I'm like,
can I tell you, I died to that.
Yeah. So I'm like, this is like less than 5%, probably close to 1%. So I'm like, okay. I'm like, he's like, I think I'm going to go for it. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess. Sure. So he starts the runoff and he realizes that the positioning to get all of his models into attack me requires him to do some like really weird orders of activation. So he's not going to have the Kriya paralyze shot in an order that matters. Like he can't have it first, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So the first bat Roadhog rolls up, needs a 12 to hit, gets it. I just hermit this one. Jalam goes up, shoots me a few times. I just use focus. I take like 6-3 damage or something. And then the next Roadhog rolls up, needing a 12 to hit. Hits it, and then needs like to roll like a 17 to kill me or something. Rolls an 11 or something, puts me down to 5 or 6 boxes. The fire goes out on my turn, and then Sarkova like walks up, crit freezes Jalam on his feet turn, and then Jalam dies. Round 4 was against Brandon Owens. So before I get too much into this game, I have to say that every game I play against Brandon Owens is one of the most enjoyable games I've played of War Machine. The dude just doesn't care about, like... So, like, okay, so... At the top end of War Machine, there's, like, a bunch of different kinds of players. And, like, I guess it's not only top end, but, like, at all aspects of War Machine, there's a bunch of different types of players. And all those different types of players have a different hunger that they come with. And, like, a different drive to be, like, to win, right? So, like, sometimes the dude can be the sweetest dude in the world until the game goes a little bit not his way, and then like he becomes an asshole. And you're like, oh, that guy's a piece of shit kind of a thing, right? Every game I've played against Brandon Owens, no matter the game situation, he's been nothing but an absolute sportsman. Like, I played against him in the Lock and Load Masters, and like even when his dice were shitting the bed and he was like running behind on time, he took as much time as he needed to properly measure everything, confirm with me everything, list off everything that was happening, and never once did I feel like he was trying to rush through an activation or like move on to the next thing. Everything he did was as sportsmanship-like, as sportsmanshiply words as they possibly could be.
Yeah, I mean, we couldn't hear the words, but me and the Sreddies and possibly Brandon, I can't remember, but we were watching that game, and it looked about as clean as a game could be. That's another game that's also was on stream on Privateer Press's Twitch, if anyone is curious. That was a super good game to watch.
And that game was really interesting. Luckily for me, my good friend Alex Dunn, a fellow Canadian WTC member, and I played a game on Thursday night where we played the exact matchup that Brandon and I played. Not on purpose, it just so happened to be what Dunn had. And I learned so much from that matchup that when we played, I had like a really good understanding of what the expectation of the matchup would be.
Yeah, because previously, and maybe I'm misremembering, but I thought we had talked where you had said that Flames in general, or maybe it was the Zerkova, you would not drop that into Sylvestro.
Yeah, so initially I had a lot of concerns about dropping it into Crucible Guard. Just in the way like the turn sequence works, like in my head in theory, like the turn sequence is I run up, he runs up. If I don't feat, he feats and takes as much as he wants from me.
Yeah.
Or he doesn't feat and takes as much as he wants from me, and then like puts Scathers to block the lines to his guys, and then I have to feat after losing a bunch of models and hope I can punch back enough, right?
Yep.
And that's like the ideal turn sequence, and it felt bad. But after playing against Dunn, I realized that the way Flames works in general and like the things you lose, you're able to still punch back effectively. Like, so the turn sequence basically went the same way, right? So like I ran up, he ran up, I positioned, he feated and killed 10 PKs, 9 PKs, no, 8 PKs, 8 PKs and 4 Vigilants. He also killed Ragman, and he killed like a bunch of other shit, but he killed a lot of stuff. And I was like, okay, I've lost, I don't know, 17 points of my army, and like he feated. So my counterpunch was to kill a train and feat back. And like I never felt like after playing the game against Dunn, this definitely felt like the winning pattern. Like this is what's gonna happen, and I'm gonna win as a result of it, if that makes sense. So like, once I took a train and feated, and then like scored 2 CPs or a CP ahead of him, whatever, I felt like I was in the driver's seat of the matchup. Just because my army is so effective at like taking apart his army, because I have so many small activations that hit that trade up effectively, that and his activations become worse and worse and worse as the game goes on.
Yeah, like I think you had the one where what was it, Acosta and. What took out one of those one of the trains? Like it was
so the first train died to Acosta, 2 Risen, Amaro Archon,
2 Thralls. You mean?
Yeah, two Thralls. Yeah. Amaro Archon and a Vigilant.
Yeah, that was nice.
And then the second train died to Acosta, a Thamar Archon, Amaro Archon, and like 3 or 4 Thralls.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
So, like, the Flames list, even though you lose a lot of models, there's so much, stickiness to it, like, to its core concept in terms of how it works, that you're able to, like, you can lose, like, 60% of your army, and it's okay as long as you still have those worker models. So once Brandon feated for the not-worker models, I felt really good about how that game would play out. Out of all the games I played over the weekend, that one was probably the most dynamic and interesting to me, in terms of like, how the game was played. There was multiple points where the momentum was swinging back against me, where like, I felt like I was in the lead, and then Brandon made a cool play, and then like, I was like, I felt like we were really close again, and then I had to do something to put myself back in the lead. It was a really good game. I ended up winning that one on Scenario. on a turn I didn't realize I was going to win.
We were screaming into the Facebook Messenger, like, fucking just contest a zone. What are you doing? You're still killing stuff. Like,
hey, man.
Still fully activating. And commentary like Jay and Hungerford are just like, I guess he wants tiebreakers. Like, I don't know what he's doing. Like, why is he still killing stuff?
Yeah, I hadn't realized they had won.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was like doing my turn, and so like the turn goes to me. Savio kills the objective with his righteous vengeance, which was sweet, dude.
That was sweet.
So those of you who haven't played Savio or think he's bad, this just goes to like my point. It's about a model finding the correct place on the table. I can't talk about this enough, but Brandon Andrews said something to me a few years ago when I first started becoming more competitive in War Machine. He said that every model is good, and it's just about finding the place they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I found, like, Flames, a lot of the time when you're playing Flames, people don't have the spare attacks to go after Savio. Like, he's like a 15-15 with dodge repose. Like, people don't have the attacks sitting around where they can just, like, attack him and feel good about it. Like, a lot of the time, they're busy attacking Archons or Heavies or PKs or whatever. Stuff that feels more pressing than Savio.
And then he just gets fucks your face with two POW 13 Weapon Masters.
Yeah, or, like, two POW 15s or two POW 17s or whatever, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He's just, like, this really good solo that with Swift Vengeance gets to be relevant to the game.
Yeah, you're that game literally sold me on putting him back in my list as one of my free choices. Like, I watched him get so much work done. I was like, fuck, okay, like, I'm in.
Yeah, and he's really, really good. And he's not good in every game state. He's not good in everything. But, like, in a list where you can kind of protect your models and push in and, like, create this layered effect where, like, yeah, you can kill my Maro Archon, but, like, the amount of attacks it's going to take means that you're not going to kill all this other stuff, right? And that's the kind of like important part of list design and playing on the table. So like in that game, all I did was like I gave Brandon something to kill every turn, and then positioned models in a way that I could counterpunch, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's all I did. And once I accepted that, like that was the way I was going to win the game. It made like all my planning, my clock management, all that stuff really easy. So that last turn of the game, I was like, yeah, I'm only going to be ahead by 4 points at the end of this turn, totally forgetting that I killed the objective.
Yep.
And so I started doing things, and then I was like, oh, I'm just going to try to kill, like, I was like firmly in the like, oh, as long as I don't get assassinated, I can't lose this game mindset. So like, oh, I'm going to just charge Sylvester with Savio. That'll be really fun. Maybe I'll kill him. And, like, just, like, doing things, because I felt like I was in a good position overall, right?
Yeah, you were fine. You were, Zarkova was back and safe, and, like, you had the zones. Like, you were fine even if that game didn't end. There was no path to him assassinating you. But then Hungerford comes over and is like, yeah, Matt, you won, so.
Yeah, I mean, I had realized I won before that. As soon as I contested, I was like, oh, I won. Oh, I'm dumb.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we couldn't hear on the stream. I just know he got up. He's like, all right, I'm going to go fix this. I'm going to go let them know that this is actually over.
Yeah, I was like, I think I win. And Brandon's like, oh, do you? And I was like, yeah, I think if I contest here, that's 5 points ahead of you. Then we paused the clock and we talked it through. And he's like, oh, yeah. I'm like, yeah, cool. Okay, cool. So like, I just want to once again echo that Brandon is like one of the best sportsmen I've ever played against. Super sweet dude. With that said, we go into the finals against Ben Beckman, the German. So for those of you who don't know, Ben Beckman was on the WTC winning team last time we were in Poland. No, the time before. Right? 2 years ago? Yeah, 2 years ago.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, 2 years ago. He was on the WTC winning team back then, and super solid player. He beat me in Lock and Load Masters to win that. And he just beat me in Warfare Weekend to win that. This game was really interesting. He expected me to drop Vlad 3. I, being me, knew I was not going to drop Vlad 3 because there's no way I trust myself to play a list I've never played before in the finals of a major event. So instead, I dropped Zarkova, and I felt pretty good about the matchup overall. I made some pretty devastating positional mistakes early on that led me to having to overcompensate for some things, but like basically the gist of it is I was able to kind of punch back through my mistakes and using my feet and get a scenario lead and an attrition lead and like be very well positioned and like just had good dice. And at the end of it, I put the Hermit within charge range of a Trident and died. I just realized a little bit too late that the Trident had Crusader's Call and that with Crusader's Call, he had enough range to charge the Hermit and then kill my face.
Yeah, yeah. When I was watching that, it was when you went over to put the Ghost Walk on Gallant, and then all of a sudden, then you blocked off the line with the Thamar Archon the best that you could, and then it was like, because I was like, oh fuck, Crusader's Call. He can get that Trident. There was just like a little sliver of line. We had thought
it was
you
bad.
Didn't use your vision, so we weren't sure. When we got one token, was like, oh, this is fine, but then. Vision was gone, and then your Hermit buff was up, and then it sucked.
Yeah, it was all bad. I done goofed. Yeah, I feel like if I don't die there, I'm probably winning that game.
I think so. Yeah, I think you had that pretty. You were pretty well up on attrition.
Yeah. So for those that don't know, like the key. This is also a game that was streamed, but like the key things of that matchup were I positioned really aggressively. I put Gallant 3 inches back behind Vigilance so that if Gallant got shot, my Vigilance could charge whatever shot him. So he went up and shot Gallant, did a shit ton of damage to him, and then my Vigilance killed a Trident. I feated and contested and did a bunch of stuff. He feated into my feet and was able to take way more than I expected him to take. Just because I don't think I feated aggressively enough. Just, you know, I makey the mistakey. It happens. And after all of that said and done, it kind of put me in an awkward position where there's like an Imperatus in my face and I had to use PKs with Stir the Blood and Hermit. Or no, it's PKs with Hermit and Power Swell to kill Imperatus, which I did, and Imperatus died a horrible death. Which was fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that matchup was really interesting. Ben played it pretty well. He made a few key mistakes that turned what should have been like a really tight, weird matchup into something that I was probably a little bit favored in. Yeah, I mean, like this just goes to show, right? Like it doesn't matter how good your positioning is. One small mistake, you just lose the game immediately.
Yep.
Especially at that high of a level. Like the Tridents are just so good at capitalizing on small mistakes like that, right?
Yes. Yeah. So let's talk, like, I mean, I guess Warfare Weekend's not exactly the best one for this because this is when everybody's bringing their best. There's not a lot of, like, experimenting and stuff going on, but I mean, Matt, you played Flames. I'm starting to play Flames. I think that's going to be a thing that's going to be big. Was there really anything else that you saw there that would be coming into the meta spotlight that may not have previously been, or was it pretty much what you expected to see?
So Warfare Weekend isn't really the place where people like. So the best way to explain this would be JVM a few years ago when I was first breaking into the competitive scene, told me that. Every year at Warfare Weekend, he brings one list that he's super familiar with, that he knows everything about, and he brings one new list that no one knows anything about, that he innovated in the time, you know, before Warfare Weekend.
Between, like, Nova and Warfare Weekend or whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
And I do that now every year, too, because I think that's a really cool challenge, not only from, like, a game perspective, but also an interesting challenge for your opponent where they're not just playing more of the meta stuff. And like, I think this kind of touches on a thing about being competitive in War Machine. It's very easy to play what's currently the best in the game, quote unquote. Like it's very easy to play Iona when Iona is the top of the game and she doesn't require a whole lot of skill to learn. And like, she's fairly easy to play. But it's a lot more interesting and you'll have better success when you play something that's slightly off meta and has a lot of really cool questions and answers that cause your opponent to have to do weird things. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of one of those things I always thought about when, like, I don't know, let's just use Haley 2 as an example, right? Or Nemo 3 or somebody where they have fallen out of favor. They're not the caster that everybody's playing. They're not what you're seeing everywhere. But then all of a sudden someone starts playing them again. locally or and doing very well, and it's like, well, yeah, they're still good. You know, Halo 2's still good. Nemo 3's still good. People just aren't playing them, but there's so I don't want to call it dark horse, but it's almost that like people move on to the next latest and greatest thing and kind of forget about some of these other casters that are still really strong. They just aren't the hotness at that particular time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of merit to playing, like, to not following the trend, to kind of, like, doing your own thing and innovating. And, like, there's an inherent risk to innovating, and that's why you don't see a lot of it at, like, events like Warfare Weekend. Because, like, once you lose, you're out. And people don't want to take the risk, right? It sucks to travel, you know, pay $600, $1,000, whatever, for the trip, and to lose round one, and just... And like, it feels bad. I did it last year, right? Like, Danny McGeehan beat me round one of the Invitational last year. And like, that felt rough. I was like, ah, fuck. But this year, I made a concentrated effort to make the weekend as much as to be worth as much as I could. I played in as many events as I could. I played as many games as I could, and it was worth it. But back to the point of innovating. I think that you don't really look for Warfare Weekend for innovation.
Sure. Sure.
What you want to pay attention to is LVO and Captain Con and ATC. That's when the new lists of the year start really popping up. But we could do the hot takes on what I expect the meta to be. I'm super into that.
Yeah, let's do that, and then let's spend a few minutes talking about Flames, because I think that's just getting kind of starting to have all the enough releases to really I think you're really going to start seeing that in a lot of places, especially after you just took, you know, we're in the finals of Warfare Weekend with it.
Yeah, so my meta predictions. I think that Minions is going to be seeing a really strong surge. Not only due to the Riot Quest solos being so, you know, prominent and relevant and, you know, in the game as you would, but also like just the fact that they've largely been relegated to this like off meta position for so long that people have kind of forgotten the kind of list that Minions can put together. And now that we kind of look at them, and I've been playing them a lot personally, and I know Bradley's pretty excited for them. I think that they're going to be seeing a giant surge of Minions.
Brad, are you excited for Minions?
I'm excited for Minions.
Okay.
Believe it or not.
All right.
I think we're going to see a big surge of Minions. I think we're going to see a big surge of Crooks coming up. I don't mean this in like new lists, but I mean this like with the meta shifting and becoming with the meta shifting as a result of like the Archons and Gatsby 4 and the convergence changes and like answering things and solos and all of these things coming out. I think that Crix is going to be on a lot of people's mouths as something you have to have a solve for.
No, I don't want to go back to that. I like this world we live in where I don't need a Crix drop.
I think that Signar, once the Thamorite Advocates release, is going to be a really potent force with access to Entropic Force readily available. Casters like Halley 2, Striker 2, and so on become really, really potent in a lot of matchups. And it solves a lot of Signar's long-standing issues in how the game resolves. Yeah, man, I think that we're like, I'm hesitant to say it that the meta won't be changing that much quickly, because like a lot of the things that are powerful will continue to be powerful. But just so everyone's aware, and like to touch on this, Huggerford did say that they're trying to push out a dynamic update before the end of the year that will include nerfs to two models and buffs to a whole slew of legacy models. So what I predict in the meta may not be relevant in a month here, right? Like, we have no idea what buffs are going to do to the overall power of some factions.
Sure. You can only go off based off what we know today. You know, right, like what those rules are currently.
So I think that the changes to Clockatrices and maybe Harbinger, maybe something else coming, will likely open up a lot of breath into the meta, where your pairing doesn't need to solve things on two completely different sides of the spectrum. And I think that's an interesting choice and probably really good for game health.
And for those that don't know, Hungerford hinted at both of those things on the stream at Warfare Weekend.
So, with that said, meta predictions are weird. I mean, I'm really excited for what 2020 is going to look like. If I had to predict things now, I think Mercenaries, Minions, Signar, Kador are all going to make massive surges towards being top tier factions, and like, if they're not already there, you know what I mean? I think having a viable solution into mercs is going to be super relevant. And then I think this kind of nicely segues us into Flames, right?
Yep. Yeah, let's talk some Flames.
So for the uninitiated, Flames is a cross-faction theme that crosses Mercs, Kador, and Signar. You can take Signar casters and Signar, Mercs casters and Mercs, and Kador casters and Kador, and it becomes a theme of that faction. You get access to all of the Morrowind and Thamrite models while in that theme, and they become the faction of the Warcaster. So what this means is that if you take a Signar Flames list, all of the models become Signarin models. So you can put Battle Priests on any model, on any unit.
Any unit, yep.
And that's basically the only interaction that matters. So I played Zirkova 1 Flames, which meant I was playing Kador, and I absolutely loved my list. It's super fun, it's super flexible, and it has very few holes. The interesting thing about Flames as a theme is that it is almost like a faction in and of itself. During the event, I found myself saying over and over and over again, I don't care what faction I play as long as I get to play Flames.
Yeah, it's like a drug. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I mean, it's also just like a wide list of models,
it is,
right?
It's
basically a selection of my favorite models in the game.
Yeah.
You get Alexia, you get Archons.
Two fucking sweet Archons.
You get PKs, which are fucking sweet. You get Zombie Boys. You get Ghosty Boys. You get
Throne.
You get Bad Boys. You get Horse Boys. You get all the boys.
All the boys. All right? Oh, so many boys.
I wish this is the only way to describe models from now on.
I'm in. So it's a fucking sweet theme. And it's really enjoyable to play. There's like inherent weaknesses and strengths to it, but it feels a lot like Mark II Menoth to me, where your opponent doesn't get to use a lot of their rules and you don't have a lot of rules, but you just have this like cage match in the middle of the table, and there's two guys enter and only one man leaves.
Yep. Two other key pieces is that you've got access to all the mercenary jacks, and you can take two Kador or Signar jacks, and then all the units get vengeance. Which is a fucking real sweet theme benefit, in my opinion.
I agree. So my top picks for each faction in Flames. Let's do that.
Go.
All right, Kador, Zirkova 1.
Yeah, for sure.
Zirkova 2 can run it, like, theoretically. I have not played it, but in theory, there exists a list that works.
Sure.
So let's go to Mercs next. My number one pick in Mercs, Cross 2.
Oh, and over Fiona. Okay.
Yeah, Fiona Flames is fine, but I like her in a regulars way more. Cross 2 Flames is so fucking sweet. You get Shield Guard PKs who escort your Archons down the table. You get Dauntless Resolve on Archons or on whatever you want so that they're +3 armor and tough no knockdown, because why not? You could swap Dauntless Resolve onto PKs as like the game resolves so that they're super durable. Like, it's just a super sweet list. Cross gets rerolls from the Thamrite Archon so he can John Woo up the table, doves flying everywhere as he blasts dudes into oblivion.
Oh yeah, plus Ghost Walk, Stealth, Gun and Run. Yeah, there's some spice there. I like it.
Well, dude, it's really cool with Thamrite Archons when you're like, they go up, they shoot people, and then they sprint 7 inches back.
Yeah, no, that seems fine.
He's heckin' sweet. With that said, this brings us to Signar.
Yes.
Now, Signar is really weird when it comes to Flames.
Yes.
They have everything that you could possibly want for running this theme. Like, you want a defensive feat, you got Striker 1. You want an offensive feat, you got Madoc, Striker 2, Striker 3. you want like a super cool skirmishing army, you got any of those casters. They're just like the super flexible. All of their casters in this theme are the most flexible choices you could put into a list.
But
but they have they don't really do the same things that everyone else does. So like when you play Cross 2, you can protect all your models super easily and he contributes to the game. When you play Zarkova 1, you do the same thing. When you play in Signar, you have to make an active choice of what you bring in your list because you just can't protect your models in the same way.
Nope. Yeah, you lack some control as well, which I feel like with Zarkova, a Fiona, maybe less so Cross, but maybe not. But like, I feel like you kind of lack that in the Signar options.
I don't disagree. I think that a lot of the choices you make when you play Signar Flames is kind of like the average list is going to have some PKs in it, maybe some Vigilantes and some like some Archons, but like a Signar list, you will have to decide what matchups you play based on your list, like list build. So like let's say you're a Striker 2 player and you're like, man, I really like Striker 2 Flames. You can't really take PKs with him, because the PKs just don't get as much mileage out of what he does. But Vigilance with him are heckin' sweet. Innately stealth, Pathfinder, highly accurate, hit like trucks, like they're just amazing. So like, okay, double Vigilance, I'm in. And then like, you don't really want Thamar Archons with him too much. Like they're good, but they're not amazing. So like maybe you only take one with him, because his only protection is D-Cell. He ends up with this super cool list that hits remarkably hard, but it's not going to play in the same way as Zarkova 1 list does. Or maybe you play with Jakes 2 or like any of the other casters. Like you just have to make an active choice in how you build your list. While with like Zarkova or Fiona, you have so much flexibility because of how diverse their kits are.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I'm finding as I agree with you. I'm playing the Signar versions. I'm enjoying it. I think there's a really cool option. So I'm not trying to shit on any of this. I think every caster that has an option in Flames, the only one, I haven't really looked at the Zarkova 2, but like I think every other one, at least that we discussed, I think there's some play there. Like I think they all have viability in some aspect. Just because how sweet that theme is.
I'm not saying they don't. Like, don't misconstrue my words. I think Signar Flames is as good as any other Flames. I think that you just have to be more conscious of what you're building.
Oh, yeah.
Zarkova's protection is so widely applicable that you don't really care what you bring in your list. But, like, if you want to play, let's say, Maddox, maybe you don't want Vigilance. Maybe you just want PKs and like Archons and stuff like that. Like you have to be super aware of what you're doing. And it's one of those things that I think a lot of people misconstrue as a lack of power. Because it isn't. Like your list is just as powerful. It's just you have more targeted matchups. You have better and worse matchups. Does that make sense?
Yeah, right. And I was just kind of using it as a preface to be like, I'm not saying the Signar ones suck. I know you weren't either. I'm just, because that's what I'm playing. It's just a little different. You're trading some things that you get. I mean, I've been playing a decent amount of Striker 1, and like, you know, you're getting Archons that get +5 armor, and a Morrowind Archon at armor 25 with 12 boxes is real hard to fucking remove out of a zone.
25. You're not even arcane shielding it?
Nah, son. They don't even need it. Yeah, I mean, you could have them. Sure, you could have them 28. I've been keeping arcane shield elsewhere, but I totally lost my train of thought with that. I don't know why
I
that knocked me off. Anyway.
Well, why isn't arcane shielded?
I don't know. Apparently, I'm fucking up.
So the thing ends up being, not to cut Grant off here, but to cut Grant off.
No, it's fine. I don't have a fucking thought anyway, because you knocked me out with the no Arcane Shield Archon. Go ahead.
Grant, I don't have a thought, Richie.
Yeah.
No, I really like, out of all of the Flames casters, I think Jake's 2 is my favorite. Her feat gives parry, which means your Morrowind Archons can just, like, fly over dudes and stab dudes in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that goes a long way in terms of how your matchups work. I really like Striker 2 a lot with Vigilance. Mm-hmm. Man, there's just Flames is such a cool theme. I could talk about Flames until the end of the night, man. It's a sweet theme.
I've been looking a lot at Maddox lately. I haven't got to play her yet, but as far as Signar, one of the things that you really lack is, like, in both the Cross version and the Zarkova, you've got access to Ghostwalk. But in the Signar, outside of Maddox, your only Pathfinder is with Throne, and that's kind of an issue. So Maddox giving the damage buff and snipe for the Archon or the Vigilance, plus an armor buff, plus Pathfinder on the charge. It is the shitty Pathfinder with Onslaught, but I've been looking a lot at her. I think she might be the one that gives us the most, that has the most tools to bring to the table. But I've yet to actually get her on the table and test that theory, but I'm pretty excited about that stuff. Plus, in a month, those Battle Priests come out, and that's going to be a huge deal when every list just suddenly has 9 Vengeance proccing Shield Guards.
Yeah, man. I really agree. It's a really sweet time to be playing Signar. Really sweet time to play Mercs.
And I'm just really Diet Kador.
Yeah, and Diet Kador, which is I mean the best thing to come of this of Warfare Weekend is Diet Kador.
So are you going to you're going to be keeping Flames on the table for a little while? Keep messing around with some stuff. You're really enjoying it.
I don't know what I'm doing right now, man. I'm bouncing between every faction again. I have like the breast cancer brawl coming up in a week or so, and I don't even know what I want to play. I'm just gonna roll a D6 or a D20 and pick something that way, I think.
There you go, Brad. What are you excited about, buddy? I know we kind of dominated the last.
No, that's all right. I think Glitch 4 is gonna be cool. Neat to see how he comes out. Probably. Start with Scar 1 and Scar 2 for that guy, because feeding on him sounds great. Beyond that, though, Matt was right. I don't know how long a foyer will go, but I'm looking forward to trying some new things. I think I'm going to be trying Minions in a moment, just seeing how it jives.
Are you really? I thought that was just you guys were just like being souped for Minions.
No, I actually think Minions are cool right now.
No, I mean, I'm not disagreeing. I just, like, literally, you've been a Crix boy as long as I've known you.
Minions are like Crix. They're also undead, kind of.
All
right. Right? I don't know.
I mean,
I feel like I'm still sticking at home. That's just a different name in front of Crix.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, technically not right at all.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's not, but no, but, that's cool, man. I'm glad you found something else you want to try. I think that's sweet. I'm excited for that. Also excited to have one less Crix player around, so that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how long it'll last, but
to quote Brad, I'm only going to play Minions going forward. I'm off Crix. Crix was never in my mind ever again. I'm a Minions boy now. Minions for life. I'm gonna get it tattooed like a tramp stamp. He said that to me before the show.
Want to trade?
So, I appreciate
Crix for
you
Minions,
reading back
straight
the
up.
Transcript. I appreciate you reading back the transcript, but the tattoo was on my forehead. You fucking idiot.
I forgot.
God, Matt, get it fucking right, bud.
So I'd just like to point out that Savio Montana Acosta is the big boy. He's so sweet.
Yeah.
He's got a sweet name, too.
He's got a pretty big dick.
I started yelling it in the middle of the game hall, and everyone freaked out. I was like, why are people freaking out?
Well, Matt, because it's not every tournament that someone starts yelling Savio Montero Acosta and across the hallway.
I mean, it is when I'm there.
Sure. So what do we got? Any last-minute things? Or I would like to maybe next get back on the thing we started where we deep-diving some meta lists. So maybe next week we can get back on that.
Come and do it.
Yeah, so maybe
we'll do a little homework. Tell me what we're going to talk about ahead of time.
Yeah, we'll pick two casters and then two lists, and maybe we'll do a deep dive on them next week and get back on that grind, because that's kind of something we started and then got off with... Basically just me not getting everyone together to record, but...
I miss Pete.
He'll be back. That's it. Yeah. That's all I got about that.
Sam, I'm hoping he comes back as well.
He'll be back.
Looking forward to it.
Yes. So, all right, guys. If no one's got anything else, let's call that for this week. But it's good to be back. So we'll be back here next week. So thanks for listening. I'm Grant.
I'm Brad.
I'm Matt.
And I'm also Brad.
I was uncertain of who I was.
Yeah, it happens, buddy. Thanks for listening.